It's 6 hours, Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Ukraine's Yatsenyuk confronts Russian ambassador at UN. And U.S. official says missing Malaysian plane may have flown 4 hours after last contact. I'm Bill Michaels reporting from Washington. Ukraine's interim prime minister came to the United Nations Thursday for help in preventing Russia from annexing the Crimean Peninsula through a controversial referendum set for Sunday. In a dramatic confrontation at the UN Security Council, Ukraine's Arseniy Yatsenyuk turned toward Russian Ambassador Vitaly Churkin and bluntly asked whether Russians want war. Churkin replied that neither his country nor his people want war. He said, "I am convinced that Ukrainians don't want this either. We don't want any further exacerbation of the situation." You can follow this developing story at voanews.com. A U.S. official involved in the search for the missing Malaysian plane says the jet may have been flying 4 hours after it disappeared from radar screens. The official said the jet was sending out a pinging signal, a sign it was trying to communicate with a satellite. He said the plane may have flown another 4,000 kilometers after controllers reported it missing. The United States is expanding its search for the plane into the Indian Ocean, far west of its intended flight path. Ugandan officials say the United States has suspended some aid to their health ministry because of the country's harsh new anti-gay law. The officials say cooperation between the ministry's AIDS program and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control is on hold while the U.S. reviews relations with Uganda. It's unclear how much aid is being withheld, but at least 50 Ugandan health workers have lost their jobs. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni signed the anti-gay law last month. African Union forces say they have reclaimed more territory from the al-Qaeda-linked militant group al-Shabaab in renewed military operations across Somalia. VOA's Gabe Joslow filed this report from Nairobi.
The AU peacekeeping force in Somalia, known as AMISOM, said Thursday that Djiboutian soldiers have taken control of territory in Hiran region, north of the capital, extending recent military gains. VOA's Somali service reports that Djiboutian, Ethiopian, and Somali troops recaptured Bolaberbe town, about 125 kilometers north of Mogadishu. In the past week, Ethiopian soldiers under AMISOM retook control of several key towns in southwestern Somalia. Somali officials said in some cases, al-Shabaab had fled from their positions before confronting the advancing soldiers. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
As the Syrian conflict enters its fourth year this week, international mediator Lakhdar Brahimi warned that if presidential elections go ahead in the coming months, it could jeopardize peace talks between the government and opposition.
If there is an election, my suspicion is that the opposition, all the oppositions, will probably not be interested in talking to the government.
Damascus has not officially announced a presidential election, but there are activities indicating it will occur. An election would have to be held by July. Western diplomats say the vote likely would be rigged to ensure another seven-year term for President Bashar al-Assad. They say the opposition would have no incentive to return to the talks. The Palestinian militant group Islamic Jihad says an Egyptian brokered ceasefire has gone into effect aimed at halting a two-day flare-up of rocket attacks into Israel and Israeli airstrikes on the Palestinian enclave. But soon after the announcement, two rockets fired from Gaza exploded inside Israel. Islamic Jihad denied it launched the attack, and it was not immediately clear who fired the rockets. The Israeli military said four rockets were fired Thursday from the Palestinian-controlled Gaza Strip, down sharply from the more than 60 that had been fired since the previous night. Israeli officials have refused to confirm any ceasefire deal was in place. Rescuers have found an eighth body in the remains of two New York City apartment buildings destroyed by a blast caused by a gas leak Wednesday. At least nine others are still missing and 63 people were hurt. But hope of finding anyone else alive is fading. Crews arrived at the building too late to investigate. For more on these stories and all of today's news, be sure to visit our website at voanews.com. Reporting from Washington, Bill Michaels, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. East African leaders will deploy troops to South Sudan beginning mid-April.
The mandate is protection and deterrence. They will protect the mechanism for the verifying and monitoring mechanism of the cessation of hostilities. They will also deter from any attack of critical areas that are of paramount importance to the country.
Seyou Mesfin is chief mediator for the IGA-sponsored South Sudan peace talks in Ethiopia. The United Nations launches a campaign to end child soldiers' recruitment. Mali unveils an initiative to boost youth employment. And Sierra Leone mourns the death of a former president.
Most Sierra Leoneans still remember that it was during President Ahmad Tijan Kabab's tenure that the war was declared as over. So we see him as a man who brought about peace in this country.
Ibrahim Ben Kagbo is the special advisor to Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma. Zimbabwe opposition MDC takes steps to mend intra-party wrangling. And we'll have analysis of this week's political chaos in Libya. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports Now Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. East African countries say they will start deploying troops in South Sudan by mid-April. Heads of state from the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, known as IGAD, met Thursday in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, to discuss the size and mandate of a stabilization and protection force in the three-month-old conflict. Martha van der Wolf reports for VOA from Addis Ababa.
Leaders from the East African bloc IGAD met here Thursday on the next steps in trying to establish peace in South Sudan. Lead mediator Seyou Mesfin says that troops from East African countries should be deployed by mid-April, but he did not specify numbers.
We should not wait until all the countries prepare and tell you that they send. The usual UN mission is they prepare the camps first. It takes them 6-9 months. We don't want to see this. We want to see the effective implementation of this mechanism at the earliest possible time.
Kenya, Ethiopia, Rwanda, and Burundi will send troops and possibly also Djibouti. Each country is being asked to also prepare a standby force in their respective capitals in case the troops in South Sudan need reinforcements. Soldiers loyal to South Sudan's President Salva Kiir have been fighting rebels believed to support former Vice President Riek Machar since mid-December following a political rift. A ceasefire was agreed to in January, but has been repeatedly violated by both sides. Part of the truce deal called for monitoring and verification teams to be sent to South Sudan. Seyoum says leaders at Thursday's summit agreed that the stabilization force will in part protect the ceasefire monitors.
The mandate is protection and deterrence. They will protect the mechanism for the verifying and monitoring mechanism of the cessation of hostilities. They will also deter from any attack of critical areas that are of paramount importance to the country.
A request to deploy the Protection and Stabilization Force by mid-April has been sent to the African Union and the United Nations Security Council. The deployment, if approved, will be paid for by the international community. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
The United Nations is launching a campaign to end the recruitment and the use of child soldiers by 2016. It says 8 governments on a Security Council list of child recruiters have agreed to sign an action plan to end these violations. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The United Nations has a list of 55 parties that recruit child soldiers. Among them are 46 non-state actors and 8 governments, including those of Afghanistan, Burma, Chad, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Somalia, South Sudan, Sudan, and Yemen. The UN Special Representative for Children in Armed Conflict, Leila Zerougui, is spearheading this campaign jointly with the UN Children's Fund. She says the outlook is promising because nations are unanimous that using children to fight in war is unacceptable and must end.
No government in the world is telling us, I have the right to recruit children and to send them fight. It's not your business. No one is telling us this. Out of the 8 that are listed, 6 already signed an action plan with the United Nations, and the 2 remaining are in a process of finalizing their action plan.
Yemen and Sudan have yet to sign the agreement, but say they are committed to stop the use of child soldiers. They presently are in negotiations with the United Nations to make this happen. The UN Action Plan obliges governments to ban their military from drafting and using child soldiers. It promises to release children from service and to reintegrate them into civilian life. It also calls upon states to criminalize this practice and ensure that no child under 18 is drafted. In the presentation of her annual report to the UN Human Rights Council, Zerugi spoke about the disproportionate and intolerable impact that conflicts around the world have on children. She noted armed conflict has intensified in several countries, most notably in Syria, South Sudan, and Central African Republic. She added that in other countries, thousands of children also are recruited, killed, maimed, raped, and kidnapped. The special representative spent 4 years serving in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. She says she was deeply affected by the terrible stories boys and girls told her about how they had been abducted, recruited, indoctrinated, and used as sex slaves.
Not only girls and boys. That's what happened to them in the bush. They serve as cook, they serve as porters, they serve as sex slaves, and they are also human shields. That's the reality.
Globally, the number of children recruited as soldiers is estimated between 250,000 and 300,000. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Sierra Leone's President Ernest Bai Koroma has announced a week-long mourning period in honor of former President Ahmed Tijan Kaba, who died Thursday at his home in the capital, Freetown. He was 82 years old. The government has also ordered all flags to be flown at half-mast as the country prepares for a state funeral. Ibrahim Ben Kagbo is special advisor to President Koroma. He tells me most Sierra Leoneans still remember that it was under President Tijan Kaba's leadership that peace finally came to their country after a deadly 11-year civil war in which about 120,000 people were killed and hundreds of thousands more maimed.
The government reacted almost immediately. They received a call from our president, who is at the moment in the Congo, declaring a 7-day mourning period, and the national flag should be flown at half-mast, and to declare that the former president will be given a state funeral, recognizing the role he played as head of state and as a very patriotic citizen of this country.
The former president led Sierra Leone during the time of the civil war. How would you describe the role that he played?
Well, of course, we must concede to the fact that during this period, peace returned to Sierra Leone, and he played a very major role in that regard. And most Sierra Leoneans still remember that it was during his tenure that the war was declared as over. So we see him as a man who brought about peace in this country, and the populace is very appreciative of this fact. And our president, Dr. Ernest Bai Koroma, is also appreciative of the fact that President Ahmed Tijan Kaba played a very major role in the governance of Sierra Leone.
He was instrumental in bringing the United Nations troops to Sierra Leone.
It was during his tenure that UNAMSIL, United Nations peacekeeping troops, came to Sierra Leone. It was also during his tenure that the British sent troops to Freetown to help create the peace process in this country.
There seems to be something in Africa where former leaders are not taken care of by the government in power. How was he treated after he left power?
When he retired, automatically he qualified for a pension equal to his last salary when he was president. He also qualified for an official vehicle, which was changed every 1.5 years. He also qualified to have a government official as a permanent secretary working for him. He also qualified to have access to housing. So we do not treat our past president shabbily. And President Ernest Bai Koroma respected him until today. And even when he fell ill, the president, Dr. Ernest Bai Koroma, visited him regularly at the hospital where he was hospitalized.
He stepped down in 2007 after serving 2 terms in office. I wonder if there is a lesson for other would-be African leaders or current African leaders.
Well, the legacy left behind in that regard cannot be disputed at all. The Constitution of Sierra Leone makes it very clear that the tenure for a president cannot exceed more than 2 terms, And after his second term, he did step down gracefully. And in the process, even his party lost the election. But even at that, he provided leadership in the transition period, handing power over to Dr. Ernest Bai Koroma. And only recently, when Ban Ki-moon arrived here, President Koroma recognized the role President Ahmad Tijan Kabak played in bringing about peace and stability in Sierra Leone.
Ibrahim Ben-Kagbo is the special advisor to President Ernest Bai Koroma of Sierra Leone. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 14th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. The time of Daybreak Africa is now 15 and a half minutes past the hour. Mali's labor minister says the government has launched a five-year initiative to create about 200,000 jobs for young people as part of an effort to stabilize the country following last year's overthrow of Amadou Toumani Touré's administration. Mahamani Babe, who is also the government spokesman, tells reporter Peter Clotty that the job creation initiative aims to employ the youth in northern Mali as part of an effort to stabilize the region.
When we came into power, the president promised the Malian people that you'll create 200,000 jobs over a period of 5 years' time. So what we did is we worked on having a national policy on employment, especially on youth employment. And also, we developed a series of big programs that will employ young people. And I'm thinking in particular about one program with IFAD, whereby we received the funding of $51 million to reach out to 100,000 young people, particularly in the rural area. So we'll be working in agriculture, livestock, and fishing. And there's another program where we're going to establish some vocational training centers and make sure that people who are going to receive training into these vocational centers, their profiles match the need of the labor market.
Most African countries rely on subsistence agriculture. With this initiative that your government has launched, what about mechanized farming? So these farmers can make a little bit more money to cater for their family in Mali.
You're right. And your question is very important because we understood that now. And we're going to create agriculture centers into big cities whereby we're going to move away from subsistence agriculture and go into more commercial, something that it's not only to feed the producers, but it's also to be able to export. You know, we have the potential. We have the know-how. Now, I think what we really missed was the political will to go into this direction. And under the leadership of the president, we're really working into this direction now. We'll have these big agropoles where we'll have the tools, the machine to really go into extensive agriculture. I think we'll go into this direction.
You talked about international development partners who will be bringing in funds to support this project. What about partnership between the government and the private sector in this policy direction?
Both the president and the prime minister really encouraged me to have a good partnership with the private sector. So when I took office, the first entities that I visited was the private sector trade unions. So I went to see them. I said, look, I don't know what happened before I came into this ministry, but as for me, your partnership with the government is really extremely important in creating jobs. So I would like to involve you in everything.
Mahamani Babe is Mali's government spokesman and liberal minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Bamako. In Zimbabwe, former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, who is founder of the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, on Thursday announced the return to the MDC of Job Sikala, who had left the party. Tsvangirai also extended an olive branch to other pro-democratic forces in what he said is his grand plan to unseat President Robert Mugabe in the next election. As Thomas Chiripasi reports from Harare, the MDC has recently been embroiled in intra-party squabbles, which have at times degenerated into physical attacks.
Mr. Tsvangirai told a news conference that the leader of an MDC faction that was calling itself MDC 99, Job Sikala, and another founding MDC member, Jobert Mudzungwe, had accepted his call to reunite and mount a strong challenge to President Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party in the next elections. Skala and Mudzumwe were among those who broke away from the original MDC in 2005 when former Industry Minister Walsh Mencube and others disagreed with Mr. Tsvangirai over the opposition party's participation in the reintroduced senatorial elections.
Today, I welcome them back to the party they helped to form. I've had intense discussion with these two colleagues and many others, and we've agreed that we will need to be in one big tent as we fight for positive change in the lives of the people of Zimbabwe.
Skala, also present at the news conference, said his decision to rejoin Mr. Tsvangirai was influenced by his desire to see a new and democratic Zimbabwe, adding Zimbabweans will only see change in the country if all pro-democratic forces worked together.
Selfish decisions that does not take our struggle anyway does not assist our country anymore. It's a long road from 1999 up to present. Still in the trenches, fighting the dictatorship that has been so brutal against the citizens of this country. I'm prepared to sing with the decision that I took today.
Skala's sentiments were echoed by Mudzumwe, who added that other activists from the MDC formation that were led by former Deputy Prime Minister Arthur Mutambara have indicated their willingness to rejoin Mr. Tsvangirai's MDC.
It's not only Mudzumwe who is coming. No, the entire team which I was with. What I'm only appealing to the leadership of MDC is to start now how best they can integrate those who are in the provinces.
Mr. Tsvangirai said he is making frantic efforts to negotiate with other political leaders like Simba Makoni, Lavmo Maduku, and Walsh Mencube of the MKD, NCA, and MDCN parties respectively, so they can form a united front against President Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party in the 2018 elections. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Libyan Prime Minister Ali Zidane was forced to stand down this week after rebel forces in the east successfully exported oil via North Korean-flagged tanker, despite assurances from the government that naval forces were in control. Mr. Zidane's resignation plunges Libya back into political crisis. As Henry Richwell reports from London, there are growing fears of an escalation of conflict between rival rebel militias.
Rebel forces in the eastern port of Sidra had loaded an estimated 234,000 barrels of crude worth around $24 million onto the North Korean-flagged tanker Morning Glory. The vessel left the oil terminal Monday and managed to evade a naval blockade. It was a humiliation for Prime Minister Ali Zedan, who had vowed to bomb the tanker if it left Libya. Parliament voted to oust him Tuesday. Mr. Zedan did not retain the loyalty of many members of the government or armed forces, says Jason Pack, researcher of Libyan history at Cambridge University.
Former Prime Minister Ali Zidane was not able to convince his subordinates to carry through his orders. And this is quite likely. One, we need to keep in mind that former Prime Minister Zidane is actually not the commander-in-chief of the Libyan armed forces. That role would have been fulfilled by the General National Congress president, Nouri Abu Sahmain, who, as an Islamist, is an opponent of Ali Zidane.
Mr. Zidane's interim successor, former defense minister Abdallah Al-Thuni, was sworn in Wednesday. On the streets of Tripoli, the Prime Minister's resignation was largely welcomed. Abdullah Maslati is a resident in the capital. He says that Ali Zidane did nothing for the country. He's been in power for a year and 3 months and achieved nothing, Maslati said. Libya's central government is failing to function, says Tripoli-based political analyst Salah El-Bakoush.
Government institutions performing really bad. And you'll see, you know, thousands of employees and it's 80% overstaffed.
The Tripoli government has given rebels in the east a two-week ultimatum to stop blockading the oil terminals or face a military assault. But the rebels have faced down such government threats many times before, says Cambridge analyst Jason Pack.
The situation is awful because sub-state actors have shown that they can undermine the resolve of the central government and sell pirated oil in the international scene, which sets a stage for conflict between stronger sub-state actors and the weaker Libyan state.
The eastern rebels, led by Ibrahim Jathran, want greater autonomy for their region, known as Cyrenaica, but they face rival rebel groups and Islamist factions. Nearly 3 years after the ouster of former dictator Muammar Gaddafi, there are growing fears the political vacuum could breed further conflict. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with cycling. Eritrean Mekseb Debesse emerged winner of the five-day Tour of Algiers race, which ended in Oran, some 350 kilometers west of the Algerian capital Algiers, on Thursday. Eritrea clinched the team title. Morocco is second ahead of Singapore. Turning to football, the Comoro Islands are Africa's most improved national team, while Cape Verde Islands have slipped by the widest margin, according to the FIFA rankings released in Zurich, Switzerland on Thursday. Lying in 24th place, the Elephants of Ivory Coast are Africa's highest-ranked team. Algeria is 25th, Egypt 26th, the Cape Verde Islands are 33rd, Ghana is 35th, Tunisia 44th, and Nigeria 47th, Cameroon 50th, Guinea 53rd, and Mali 56th. In Costa Rica, Ghana play North Korea at the start of their campaign at the Women's FIFA Under-17 World Cup in Liberia tomorrow Saturday. Winners of the bronze medal at this competition 2 years ago, Ghana will also play Germany and Canada in their Group B preliminaries. Meanwhile, tournament debutants Zambia challenge Italy in the capital's hand San Jose also on Saturday. They will engage Venezuela and Costa Rica in subsequent group fixtures. Regular campaigners Nigeria take on China in their Group D opener in Alajuela on Sunday. Nigeria later play Colombia and Mexico in other group encounters. In boxing news, four Ghanaians climb into the ring to fight British opponents for WBU world titles in Bournemouth on the south coast of England tomorrow Saturday. Emmanuel Clotty fights Ryan Barrett for the welterweight title as Michael Barnor encounters Jamie Spate in the super bantamweight division. Philip Cote will trade punches with Scott Dixon in the middleweight division. Ibrahim Labaron engages Garth Hoggs in the light heavyweight bout. Another Ghanaian, Michael Ansel, fights Ian Weaver in a non-title 10-round super featherweight contest. In tennis, the Africa Junior Tennis Championship enters its third day in Nairobi, Kenya today, Friday. Over 120 boys and girls in the under-14 and under-16 age groups are vying for honors in the 10-day event. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good weekend. We'll see you again on Monday. Listener mail for this Friday morning comes from Ambrose Ajio of Makurdi in Benin State, Nigeria. He says, dear VOA, in the face of a United States offer of counterinsurgency intelligence cooperation to Nigeria to reinvigorate the fight against Boko Haram, I do hope that President Goodluck Ebele Jonathan will consider for inclusion the recurring violent clashes between nomadic cattle-rearing herdsmen of the Fulani tribe and some Tiv tribal communities in Benin State, where lives are being lost, valuable properties destroyed, and people displaced. We thank you, Ambrose Ajio of Makurdi in Benin State, Nigeria, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Sierra Leone's former president, Ahmed Tijan Kaba, who is widely credited with ending an 11-year civil war, has died after a long illness. He was 82 years old. That's it for this Friday, March 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Tracy Carter, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with all of our engineers, I am James Barty in Washington, wishing everybody in Africa a very good weekend. But please stay tuned for International Edition next on The Voice of America.
African Music Mix.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best. Tune in from 0 to 300 hours UTC and from 11 to 1300 hours UTC every single day on the Voice of America.